Let's suppose that somebody says something that totally insults you. They say that, they say in so many words they're calling you stupid, and that really bothers you if somebody calls you stupid. Okay, but they didn't say it in such a way, they didn't really use the word stupid, but they said it in so many words that you were stupid, and it made you feel insulted. Okay, but then when you look at how to handle that, you may think, well, he didn't really say I was stupid, but sure got under my skin the way he insinuated I was stupid. Shall I bring it up? And that guy will think, well, it's not really worth bringing up. So he doesn't bring it up, and it festers in him. It just really bothers him. And every time he has any conversation with this guy, this is in the back of his mind, it's festering in his emotional body, this grievance. And it gets worse and worse until finally, whenever he looks at this guy, it almost makes him sick. He just can't stand the sight of him anymore. And besides, he continues to say stuff that insinuates the guy is stupid. Doesn't use a stupid word, but he insinuates it. And so, what is the way out? The way out is honest communication. You need to sit down with the guy and say, look, when you said ABC, it made me feel like you thought I was stupid and it really hurt my feelings. And then when the person says that, all the negative energy is released. And it's released to the other guy that caused the problem. If he accepts responsibility, then it will go through him and into the universe and dissipate. If he doesn't accept responsibility, then he'll be in a very irritative state, and he will be very negative toward the guy and feel like he was unjustly accused and everything. So this negativity needs to be dispersed to keep our words pure, so our words will have power. Because if we haven't forgiven those, worked out the principle of forgiveness with people correctly, it takes away power from our words. Whenever a person has a grievance of any kind, his words will not have full power. So we need to let all the grievances, we need to work out all those grievances. Brian, did you have a question?
Well, I was hoping that there was another way besides having to, you know, talk to someone, because, you know, I'd be spending the next 150 years talking to you. Right? Is there another way that you can discharge this negativity without, besides that which you covered through honest communication?
I don't know. You let things out pretty good from my observation of you.
Thank you.
And those are the people he wants to apologize to.
But
the answer is no, then.
Well, maybe you don't have as many grievances as you think you have. But
I never considered.
You know, I ought to look at your handwriting again to see if you do much suppression. But I don't think you suppress that much. I think you seem that when somebody bothers you, you pretty much let them have it. I've seen you let people have it to the point that they start shaking. You know.
Well, yeah, so that's maybe
it's more stark. I'd say more stark honesty with you is maybe what you have to work with than that.
Yeah. So how does suppression show in handwriting?
Okay, I'll show you. It shows in your M's. You make your M like this, and it's called retracing. And you bring it up, and you follow the line right up like this, and you follow it up again. So the line on your M and N's is retraced. Now a non-retraced M goes like this. So you got no retracing, you got little V's in there. So this person here doesn't suppress.
I got these.
There's the one M in my I got several of them. Sometimes I do.
Yeah, right, Mother, may I? I'll see if you suppress. I don't see a lot of evidence of suppression with you. How about people that know Brian? Yeah, see any evidence of suppression?
Like,
I don't know how to do cursive.
M.
No.
And M. I don't think mine are retraced.
I say a little bit, though.
A little bit of retracing, but not much. Usually if somebody offends you, you let them know that you're offended.
Irritation.
Yeah, irritation. I know Brian, and he gets a. I think irritation is more. And I noticed you've made a lot of progress. You seem to have that under control.
However, in class you made a comment that you're supposed to take that individual who irritates you and realize that they have the potential to be your savior.
Right, and that was the next thing I was going to say. Now, concerning this, and I've said this many times, and I can't really say it too many, is that pick the person in your life that is the most irritating person in your life, and you know who that is. Almost all of us has some person. And according to the Course in Miracles, that person is your Savior. Because if you can take that person and you can forgive him, and you can see the Christ in him, then you can see the Christ in anybody, and you can eliminate the grievances out of your life. Because if you can forgive the most irritating person in your life, the second, third most irritating will be piece of cake. So the person that's the most irritating person in your life is your Savior, according to the Course in Miracles.
But as I contemplated your words that night, you know what happened?
What?
I realized that I have a world full of Saviors.
Yeah? There's usually one that's the worst, though.
Yeah.
There's usually one that's the worst. In most people's lives... In most people's lives, you say, think of the person that irritates you the most. Usually one particular person will come up. You know, sometimes it's more than one, but usually it's one particular person. And in a lot of cases, it's the spouse, you know. Fortunately with me, I got a good spouse. But, got to say that here.
Yeah, you got to go.
But there's usually one person in your life that you have a hard time dealing with. And that person will bring you salvation from grievances if you are able to overlook him and see the Christ in that person. So we need to do all these things in order to give our words power, to temper our words with justice, with compassion, with love, forgiveness, all the basic principles as taught in Sunday school. Is important, and this is one area that, you know, the basic church teachings are good. They teach all these things, even though they what I found interesting when I went to church, the very worst sin that you could do was look at a Playboy magazine. It was a lot worse than hurting somebody's feelings. But these basic principles they teach in church are actually basic principles that if we incorporate them can give our words power. But people don't realize this through the church teachings. If you realize, for instance, the power that can be given you with when you have complete honesty, then people will work much, much harder to be honest. If they don't realize this, because in the general church teachings, they're saying, well, everybody sins and everybody makes mistakes. Okay, I'll go make a bunch of mistakes then. So, but once you realize the principles that leads to the power of the Word being God and having the power of as if it was spoken by God himself, then that kind of gives you a little bit of determination to live your life in such a way that your words will be words of power rather than words that are just sent into the ethers and nothing happens. One of the things that we can do to follow the path of producing the words of power is to always follow the highest you know. And this is a statement I've written that's probably quoted just about more than any other thing I've written, is that many times you don't know the best thing to do. And so what people do is they go to their minister or leader or friend and they ask, well, what should I do? Well, what you should always do is follow the highest you know. If you don't know what to do, then make some decision. Remember the parable of decision? The guys that couldn't make the decision were the ones that were in the true hell. They were back there, and they were scared to go along the path. They were scared to make a decision because they thought, well, one of these paths leads to hell, so I don't want to take either one. So they were terrified. The two that went ahead and made the decision were wound up both of them being happy with the way everything turned out. Even the one that went to hell. The one that went to hell helped to turn hell into heaven, and he was the happiest one of them all. And so if we follow the highest we know, what happens is we're faced with a decision. Sometimes we're faced with a decision where we don't seem to get any help. We may pray to God and maybe nothing comes. In that case, you look at the two, and if nothing else, flip a coin. But make a decision, one path or the other. Don't go into non-decision. That's the worst. No decision is worse than a bad decision. A bad decision is better than no decision. So we should always make some decision when we're faced with two paths in front of us. And then, if we happen to pick the wrong path, what eventually happens?
You'll be given an opportunity to correct it.
Right. Action. Eventually, you'll find out if it's the wrong path or not. Huh. Once you go far enough on that path, just like a physical path, say you want to go to Twin Falls, and you reach a fork in the road, and there's no sign. You know one of them goes to Twin Falls, and one of them goes to somewhere else. Okay, if you pick the wrong road, after you go far enough, you're going to realize, once you're in Salt Lake or something, you're going to realize, oop, I took the wrong road. So you got to backtrack, and then go back, and then take the right road. So even if you make the wrong decision, once you go far enough ahead, you'll figure out, you know, that was the wrong decision. I got to backtrack and go take that other fork in the road. That other fork in the road was the right one. So even a wrong decision is good in the end, if you don't know. If you know one decision is better than the other, the highest you know is the higher decision.